Today, we'll cover a couple of stories from the Panchatantra about angry birds. Seriously, don't cross them or they can inflict major pain. Regardless of whether you're a giant elephant or the mighty ocean. Welcome to Stories from India. This is a podcast that will take you on a journey through the rich mythology, folklore, and history of the Indian subcontinent. I am Narad Muni, the celestial storyteller and the original Time Lord. With my ability to travel through space and time, I can bring you fascinating stories from the past, the present, and the future. From the epic tales of the Mahabharata and Ramayana to the folk tales of the Panchatantra, to stories of Akbar Birbal and Tenali Raman, I have a story for every occasion. The purpose of the stories is neither to pass judgment nor to indoctrinate. My goal is only to share these stories with people who may not have heard them before, and to make them more entertaining for those who have. In this episode, we are doing a couple of stories from the Panchatantra. Well, technically, they are really part of a single story. For that matter, all of the dozens of stories in the Panchatantra are really just five stories. There are five books in the Panchatantra, and each of them features a single story that doesn't end. At the conclusion of any particular narration, one of the characters narrates a brand new story. This keeps going several levels deep. On to today's episode. Let's dive right in. Into the ocean. Well, not quite the ocean, but right next to it. Mr. and Mrs. Lapwing stood at the beach. If you haven't heard of the term lapwing, let me quickly clarify that they were birds. You can check the show notes on the site sfipodcast.com to see what a lapwing looks like. Mr. Lapwing was explaining to his new wife why this was the perfect spot for their new home.
"This is prime real estate," he said. "The salesbird who sold it to me explained all the perks of this nest. We just have to step outside of it, and we have a delicious seafood meal every day. No shortage of omega-3 for our future kids."
And he affectionately patted their eggs in their baby carrier. Mrs. Lapwing looked around at the nest a little skeptically. "But there's no protection. There are no leaves on that tree. So nothing to protect our nest from things that might fall from above."
"No, no, no. You don't understand," her husband said. "The salesbird explained it to me. That's not a bug, it's a feature. This way, we have automatic showers whenever it rains."
Mrs. Lapwing wasn't convinced. She tried a different tactic. "Do you know anything about tsunamis?"
"Yes, of course I know about tsunami. He lives over in the mountains on the pine tree, doesn't he?"
"For your information, a tsunami is a large wave or a series of waves caused by an earthquake or an underwater volcanic eruption. Get it? A huge wave. It could wipe out our nest,"
Nah, there's no such thing, her husband said. It was debunked recently on that Mythbusters TV show. This ocean isn't powerful enough. It can't do anything about it. Best case, we'll get a little spray now and then. I had to pay a little extra for our house to be located in the splash zone. It's a good thing.
Mrs. Lapwing may have been okay with what her husband just said, but the ocean was not. Varun, the god of the ocean, took offense. Naturally, he saw this as a challenge.
How dare that insignificant little bird think that the ocean was incapable of wiping out its insignificant little nest? Now, if the nest was actually somewhere up in the mountains, like the guy who seemed to be Mr. Lapwing's friend, that might actually be a little hard for Warren to wipe out. But the Lapwing's nest? Warren wouldn't even have to move a muscle. Not that the ocean had any muscles anyway. It was all liquidy.
The nest was so precariously balanced on a branch of a dead tree that Warren thought that even a moderate wave at high tide could sweep it away. So that very afternoon, at high tide, Warren grabbed the nest and took it away, with 3 eggs inside it. Mrs. Lapwing had just finished worm fishing, quite successfully, if I might add. She was excited to return to her nest with a surplus of the juiciest worms, just in case one of her chicks had hatched. She had been out since early that morning, because she wanted to catch all the early worms, according to the proverb. And now, when she returned, she couldn't find her nest. At first, she thought she had flown to the wrong part of the beach. New home, easy to get confused. But then she realized that she wasn't confused. The tree was there. The nest was not. She called the police, of course. Her eggs had been kidnapped. And there wasn't so much as a ransom note. But she still suspected foul play. And by foul play, she didn't mean chickens. She suspected the ocean. The tree trunk was suspiciously wet just past where the nest was. So obviously, the ocean must have washed away her nest. At this point, Mr. Lapwing just got back. He had been out playing Angry Birds with his buddies. Just the video game, not a real-life enactment. It took him a while to realize what a terrible situation they were in. After telling her husband many times that she had told him so, Mrs. Lapwing then narrated a couple of stories to further illustrate her point. She started the story about the turtle that couldn't keep its mouth shut, even though its life depended on it.
Wait a second, Mr. Lapwing interrupted. Narad already covered that in episode 29. So can you just skip ahead to the next story on your list?
Mrs. Lapwing agreed and launched into the story of the elephant and Mrs. Sparrow. And yes, Mr. Lapwing could assume that it was their cousin, Sparrow, who lived in the jungle nearby. One day, Mrs. Sparrow was just doing her day job, which was not unlike Mrs. Lapwing's day job, gathering worms for her family of unborn chicks,
that might hatch any moment. Mr. Sparrow was probably out bowling or at the pub or something with his buddies. When Mrs. Sparrow returned from her worm gathering, she saw something horrible. An elephant was charging through the jungle and stomping on everything in sight. And it was headed straight for her tree. Just the vibrations from the elephant's approach were enough to dislodge the nest. But it got a lot worse. Because the elephant not just uprooted the sparrow's tree, but he stomped on the nest with the eggs inside it. He seemed to have realized that he had stepped into something sticky, because he scraped the remains of the sparrow children off of his foot on a nearby tree trunk.
"There's some message here, isn't there? I can feel it," Mr. Lapwing interrupted. "The elephant represents the ocean. The sparrows are us, and their eggs are our eggs. Am I right?"
Mrs. Lapwing commended her husband for his perception and moved on to slightly more important matters, like the actual narration of the story. Mrs. Sparrow was very, very cross with the elephant. She wanted revenge. And never mind serving it cold, she wanted to serve it warm and toasty right then and there. So she went to her friend for help. Her friend was a fly. Mr. Sparrow didn't think much of the idea. He didn't think that the fly would be all that useful. He thought everything that a fly could do, the two of them could do as well.
"A sparrow can fly, but a fly can't sparrow," he pointed out.
But Mrs. Sparrow overruled him. Mrs. Fly couldn't think of a way that they could get revenge on the mighty elephant, who, in all probability, didn't even know that any of them existed. But she suggested that they consult with her friend, Mr. Woodpecker. Mr. Sparrow was a bit of a speciesist. He silently thanked his luck that at least they'd be consulting a bird. But any hopes that Mr. Woodpecker wasn't just a bird brain were soon dashed, because Mr. Woodpecker had absolutely no ideas to contribute. And in fact, the situation had to be explained to him at least 3 times before he understood why they were trying to harm the elephant. The only contribution he added was his suggestion that they talk to his friend, Miss Frog. Mrs. Fly seemed a little nervous at the suggestion, but she went along. And only after many, many reassurances that Miss Frog was now vegetarian and she wouldn't harm a fly. It was true. In fact, Miss Frog and Mrs. Fly got along so well that by the end of the evening, they were best friends forever. But we are skipping forward a bit. Miss Frog heard the sparrow's story patiently, and she had a solution ready. "It's simple, isn't it?" she asked. "All we have to do is to use some clever psychology. Mrs. Fly, you should buzz very loudly near the elephant's ears. He'll be annoyed, but he'll also be worried. Most animals close their eyes when they hear flies around. It's just a reflex mechanism to protect their eyes. When the elephant does that, Mr. Woodpecker, you should go and peck at them. That'll hurt the elephant.
Buzzing and pecking at eyes. I can see it can do some damage. But wouldn't the elephant just shrug it off?
Mr. Sparrow asked.
No, hear me out, Miss Frog continued. That's where I come in. In general, what's the first thing anyone does when they think their eyes are hurt? They try to wash them with water.
But there's no water anywhere near here, protested Mr. Sparrow.
And that is the psychology bit,
the frog replied.
We don't need actual water. I'll be nearby, and I'll croak. The elephant will think there's a pond and approach me, following the sound of my voice. And then, crash! He'll fall right into the pit I'll be standing next to. You remember that pit near the big banyan tree? It's very convenient how it's exactly the size and shape so that the elephant can fall in, but not climb out. They all thought it was a lovely plan. And it went like a cuckoo clockwork. The elephant closed its eyes when the fly buzzed. The woodpecker pecked at the elephant's eyes. The frog croaked and drew the giant beast to the pit. The elephant fell inside and was trapped.
Mr. Lapwing was a little worried.
Did they let him out? He didn't starve in there, did he?
Mrs. Lapwing shook her head.
That's irrelevant. What matters is that those four tiny creatures took down this mighty beast, despite their difference in size. They did it because they helped each other. Mr. Lapwing thought long and hard. Finally, he asked,
You think I should go look for a woodpecker, a fly, and a frog to help me against the ocean?
Mrs. Lapwing counted to 10 silently. She remembered her vows to stick with him through everything. And she remembered her later vows to herself to be patient with him.
Not quite, she said. I'm saying go talk to your friends. See if they can help us get our eggs back from the ocean.
Mr. Lapwing flew off to his pub. All his friends were there, except the magpie. Given that he was a thieving magpie and he had been caught, he was now a jailbird. Mr. Duck told Mr. Lapwing that if his eggs were missing, he knew a detective friend who could quack the case in no time. Mr. Lapwing explained that there was no doubt that the ocean had taken the eggs. No question at all. The pheasant was outraged by the ocean's actions. He slammed his wing on the table and said, That's illegal. The eagle said,
Thanks, but I actually do feel okay. Maybe just a little unpheasant, now that I've heard Mr. Lapwing's story.
The crow said that he would get some additional help, so he made a call to his friend, the raven. The raven soon arrived, and his contribution was that they should try to find an elf. An elf could control water. At least, the raven had seen a movie last night, The Lord of the Wings, The Fellowship of the Ring, in which an elf just created a flood out of nothing.
If they could find an elf who could control water, she could force the ocean to give up the eggs. From there, the ideas got dramatically worse. The crow suggested using a crowbar to lift the ocean up from the seabed. The crane said that he had it on good authority that he could lift very heavy weights, so he could try to lift the ocean up on his wings, while the other birds quickly scanned the ocean floor for the eggs. The owl had been silent until then. He took Mr. Lapwing aside and told him that he should pray to the one who could solve this problem in a jiffy. The owl was talking about Garud. Garud was the half-man, half-bird, who was also the king of the birds.
"But I'm not a bird of prey, you know,"
Mr. Lapwing protested.
"I think you're getting a little confused between those homonyms, prey and prey,"
Mr. Owl said, and urged him again to pray, as in address a solemn request to a supernatural entity. In this case, Garud. Mr. Lapwing went home and prayed to Garud. Mrs. Lapwing was a little reluctant. It was like her husband hadn't understood the moral of the story she had narrated. The point was that even tiny, apparently powerless creatures could take down a mighty creature, like the ocean. But having Garud on their side would make it a completely one-sided battle. Even a single feather of Garud's could hold up the weight of the whole earth. What hope would there be for the ocean? But she prayed anyway. And Garud instantly appeared before them. Garud cared about his subjects and wanted to right this wrong done to the Lapwings. He was angry and he was going to dry up the ocean. That might definitely have upset the Earth's delicate ecological balance. So it's lucky for the planet that Vishnu intervened. Vishnu is the preserver of the universe, and along with Brahma the creator and Shiva the destroyer, the three of them are the holy trinity of Indian mythology. Vishnu's vehicle is Garud. Because Vishnu needed to travel just then, and he couldn't find Garud, he had come there looking for him. Garud explained why he couldn't help Vishnu just then. He needed to solve a major problem here. Vishnu volunteered to help. He said he could take care of it quickly. Varun was listening to this conversation, of course. And before Vishnu was even done rolling up his sleeves, Varun had gone and fetched the Lapwing's eggs on a silver platter with seashell decorations all around. And that's that. The Lapwings did move to a better nest, and they were a happy family when their eggs hatched. Obviously, this being the Panchatantra, the story didn't really end here. Both of these stories were inside a framing story, which continued on. But this is all we'll have time to cover this time. Check out the show notes on the site sfipodcast.com to see what a lapwing looks like. Also check out the show notes and the site sfipodcast.com for previous Panchatantra episodes. That's all for now. In the next episode, we'll do a folktale from Bihar. It's a bit of a mashup between Hansel and Gretel and Goldilocks and the Three Bears. Except, there are 7 Goldilocks and 7 bears. And the bears have domesticated cattle. But that last bit should not be surprising, if the bears have also built a home and chairs and beds and learned to make porridge. Thank you all for the comments on social media and on Spotify's Q&A. I can't directly reply to the questions there, but I'll address them here on this show. Thank you Hiranmayee and Mushroom and Rishan for the feedback. I loved reading your comments. Hiranmayee, I'd be happy to do an episode on Aruna Asaf Ali sooner than the next Independence Day. And Ankur, I'll look into doing one on Rana Kumbha. Rishan, I'll go back to the Ramayana very soon. Watch out for it in the next few weeks. If you have any other comments or suggestions, or if there are any particular stories you would like to hear, please do let me know by leaving a comment or a review on the site sfipodcast.com or tweet at sfipodcast or reply to the questions on Spotify's Q&A. You can also find me on Instagram and Facebook. Be sure to subscribe to the show to get notified automatically of new episodes. A big thank you to each and every one of you for your continued support and your feedback. The music is from purpleplanet.com. That's purple-planet.com. Thank you for listening, and I'll see you next time.